Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome to Radical Transformational Leadership with Dr. Monica Sharma, heard every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday, 6 a.m. Eastern. This is a Dream Vision 7 Radio Network production on the Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age platform. To learn more, go to DreamVision7Radio.com. The survival and future of humanity and civilization depends on the framework Monica Sharma outlines in Radical Transformational Leadership. It is my sincere hope that anyone who wants to participate in healing our wounded planet will read this book and follow its principles. Anyone who doubts that the changes needed to lift our world beyond the chaos of today's deep problems and political chest thumping need look no further than this book. The new field she describes as radical systems and cultural transformation constitutes a kind of invisible renaissance emerging around the world of understanding the entwined inner and outer nature of genuine systemic change. I invite you into this most powerful show with Dr. Monica Sharma.
Thank you, Deborah, for introducing me again. And it's been a pleasure to walk with you through these series. The last time we spoke and the examples we took related to our innate capacities, and we spoke about this contemporary pioneer that we are, that sources our inner capacities, our systems thinking, to solve problems and shift norms. But we have another very important ability, and that's the ability to work with our lives, to design what we want, and the ability to make change. That's just who we are. So that aspect of ourselves we call in this work the unifying architect. We can be a divisive architect. We have a choice. But we are also can be the unifying architect. So our assumption in this work is that you care enough to be a radical, unified architect, a person who can design a unique response, a radical, unique response, can design that, and can design differently to make a difference. And when you think of design, we often think that an architect is one who really has been taught something about systems. Well, a designer is really an emerging synthesis, says Buckminster Fuller, of an artist, an inventor, a mechanic, an objective economist, an evolutionary strategist, and every citizen is a designer. Every citizen is a designer. So what is it in us that allows us to design? We see patterns, you see. We know that we can transform the norms and patterns that shape our lives today, provided we anchor ourselves in those values. Who is this unifying architect? It's, of course, you, me, and every citizen. But really, what is it that makes us a unifying architect? First, we need to have the courage to act. The compassionate courage to act. It's not just courage like bravery. So we distinguish bravery and courage. So bravery is usually, it's, you know, based on the social construct, and we expect people to be brave. For example, it's expected that in gangs, if somebody's killed my friend, I should go and kill somebody else. And I would be a coward if I didn't do that. But this is not about bravery. This is not about cowardice. This is about courage. And courage comes from breaking open my compassionate heart so that I'm called to act. So a unifying architect has that compassionate courage to act. Second is a game changer. Who is a game changer? A person who knows how to change the rules of the game, as simple as that. But there are many game changers, and those game changers, the people who create the rules of the game, are not necessarily creating them on the basis of equity, dignity, compassion. Very often, the game is for more immediate needs. Not even, it could be immediate needs, but it also could be immediate wants. That means beyond what we need. And it's Gandhi who said, you know, the world has enough for everyone's need, but it doesn't have enough for everyone's greed, and we can say, and wants. So I need to be a principled game changer, not just any old game changer. And a unifying architect is a principled game changer. Third, is able to see the invisible patterns and norms and systems and root factors that shape our reality, our global and local situation. And when that person designs, takes that into account. For example, they say that the rules of finance today are such that if we distributed all the wealth in the world equally to everybody, just like a thought experiment, in a short while, even in 3 months, it will start becoming like a pyramid because of the way the rules are made. So how do we transform the rules of the game? It may seem very daunting when we look at all the things that are necessary for change, but it's not so daunting when you realize and I realize that if I can leverage one aspect of the system, there will be many effects of that leverage. In the world of ecology, and you will be meeting someone today, that's Kirsten Gallo, and she will give you examples that come from this world where we know that we live in an interdependent world. We may think we are independent. We may act as if we are independent, but we are not independent. We are interdependent. What I wear today as clothes, what I eat as food, is based on what's happened somewhere else by somebody else. And it's dependent on how I cultivate, whether that's organic or not, whether it harms the soil or not, whether the labor was paid adequate wages or not, whether that person was treated with dignity or not. So all these invisible patterns are taken into account by a unifying architect. That person can look beyond the rhetoric and the narrative that disempower us and can cut through that with a sharp sense of what's needed for the world. The fourth thing about a unifying architect is that the person can craft policies, projects, and processes that are enduring. And enduring in for sustainable and equitable change, not just enduring in a manner that disenfranchises people. And the person is proficient in using the design templates that actually lead to this kind of change. So instead of using, let's say, a template which we often use, such as the logic frames, nothing wrong with logic frames, except that logic frames are like a waterfall. They go one way, and they inevitably create silos. Do I know how to use different frames that do not create silos, that are based on values? And you'll hear more about this from Kirsten Gallo as an example. and I'll share some thoughts too. So he's proficient in using these kinds of templates. And this person is intent on generating results. It's not rhetoric. It's not the theory of change only. It's the theory and practice of change. So these are the attributes of a unifying architect, that I have the courage to act. I'm a principled game changer. I can see those invisible patterns that disenfranchise people, the planet, the patterns, the systems, the norms, and I respond. I respond by learning these templates. I respond by crafting policies based on these templates and the actions and projects, and I generate results. So I think you and I are actually the potential unifying architect. So I'm inviting you to make a choice. I'm inviting you to step into your greatness, to recognize the pioneer in you, the caring in you, and to be able to design differently to make a difference. We spoke about one template last night. Sorry. We spoke about one template in the last show. We are going to speak about a couple of other templates this time. So in the last conversation, we talked about connecting who we are, sourcing that, our value, to the kinds of shifts we want to make and the problems we wish to solve. So we solve a problem, and as we solve the problem, we look at the system and the norms, and we source our value. And we called it the conscious full spectrum approach. That's one template. A second template that we use, and we have found very, very useful, is the synergistic operational strategies. This I generated working over 25 years in over 60 countries in numerous projects, and to see what is absolutely essential for us to begin making the difference. So we have two stages of operational strategies, synergistic operational strategies, but I'll only describe one of them today. What do we mean when we use the word synergy? We use synergy to distinguish summation from exponential impact. So summation means that I do something, you do something, and let's say our impact can be counted as 4 or 5, or, you know, on a scale. And then later we see that, you know what, when we are designing on the systemic changes and each of us approach it, our impact is actually greater. That is synergy. When I'm able to align and attune my strategies by shifting patterns and systems, I can have exponential impact. I will have enduring impact. What are these? So the first is that whenever you and I want to create change, whether that is at home, whether that's in my workplace, or that's in society, I need to put 4 essential things in place. So let's say something like a project at home could be educating my child. A project at work could be related to crafting a strategy to reduce maternal death. And let's take these 2 examples. So what do I need? I need, number 1, a process where I transform myself, a process where I connect to who I am, whether it is as a parent or whether it is what I teach the child. Today, we know that in most schools, we want the character of children to be built upon. And the character is based on universal values. We also know that we need to regulate our emotional hijacks, developing the capacity to be able to ground myself in my greatness is the first thing, whether it's for the child or for me, whether it's for me at work and my coworkers. The second, I need information. I need to track whatever I'm doing. So imagine I'm thinking about my child's education. I need to be able to track his or her well-being, physical well-being, the way in which the child is able to learn in the classroom, the child's play, the child's fun, and all of that. So that is something I need to have some information on. And if one part is not working so well, I can then focus on it. Similarly, I need information on maternal death in the community, in a hospital, well-being, how we prevented something. So we need information. So we need a way of what we can activate in ourselves, develop ourselves, number one. Number two, we need information. Number three, we need a supportive environment, whether that's the home environment and the agreements parents have as to how to nurture a child, bring up a child, or whether it's the policies in a workplace. So the policies around maternal mortality reduction would be vital. Who gets to access care? How can we make it available for everyone? Who utilizes that? And how can we transform it if it's not working? And we need a fourth thing. And this fourth thing is what is usually missing in most programs. It's supporting the principled people who take risk. It's so vital that we are able to publicly support and speak up for those who take the risk to make life for everybody with dignity, equity, and compassion, and that their lives are better. They are able to reach their full potential, that we create the circumstance for that. And it's not often that we are able to garner agreement right away. So in the beginning, we may face a lot of resistance. How can you and I support people who are taking the risk to make change? For example, there are people who are talking about quality of education. How can we support the necessary budget in our local, for our local schools? How can we generate enough interest in communities to finance our colleges? Because this is a land of plenty. It's not that there isn't money. It's what are we using the money for? What do we really value? We can shift our investment for education in schools, and we can have debt-free education in college. For that to happen, there are people sticking their necks out. They are going to face resistance. They are going to be told stories like, you know, it's not economically viable. Are we going to step up and support them? Look at the way in which the children who have suffered in Florida in schools because of killing and gun violence, how can we support them? How can we be true to equity, dignity, and have compassion? So I think this is a very, very vital area for us to design. So this template we call synergistic operational strategies. And know that you and I, as citizens, as policymakers, can all enforce these policies for the well-being of our children and ourselves. I will then take you to the third one. And that's what you will hear our guest speaker today, Dr. Kirsten Gallo, speak about. And that is our transformational results chain. And I know that most of you who are policymakers, program managers, and head initiatives, you're familiar with the logic model. There are many people in academia today who talk about the theory of change. That is an important dimension of designing to be able to look at the largest impact we want to have, that is enduring and sustainable, to be able to look at outcomes of our projects, which is something like, what is it that we actually want to change? Do we want to change the learning levels in schools and have quality education? Do we want to have quality college education? So that's an outcome where something has been achieved. It's like a goal. So we have goals that are big goals, that are goals that are based on our values. And then, of course, we have activities. We have activities, and some people call them outputs. And so we must act in order that we have change. And we must strategize in a way that we have change that has impact. And we must have, you know, inputs like money ourselves. But this is largely logical, and it's largely captured in the theory of change. For us, it is the theory and practice of sustainable and equitable change. That's the key. And for that, I need to have an iterative process, not a one-way logical process that actually fragments the activities. And then we spend an endless amount of time trying to collaborate and see synergies. And we want collective impact. For collective impact, we must have transformational results chains that are iterative, that are based on interdependence. So I invite you to be the architect you are. I invite you to see that you and I can not only unfold who we are through our actions every day, we can unfold who we are by designing to make a difference. Because what we design is what we deliver. And if we cannot hone and cultivate our design capabilities, we will keep wishing for change without actually being able to act for sustainable change. So it's not complex. All I know is that we need to be able to engage through the qualities, the assets, the inspirations, the aspiration we have for a better humanity. Thank you so much. And we will be joined by our guest, Kirsten Gallo, after the break.
We live in a world battling for peace, threatened with violence and inequality, being justified as both means and ends, sometimes disguised, packaged, and branded differently. This self-destructive worldview is dominated and backed by spurious arguments for leadership based on the idea of supremacy of race, religion, culture, or of money. Monica's counter, a perspective drawn from contemporary idiom, is based on experience and conviction. It shows that leadership can be shaped with equality, freedom, justice, and where means and ends are rooted in the transformatory power of human compassion. Let's explore this transformatory power of human compassion together. Join us for the program with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday at 6 a.m. Eastern. Share this information widely. Enroll people who want to make a difference. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network hosts many programs that unite humanity, sourcing our love. Are you satisfied with the world as it is today? If you're not satisfied, join us for a book launch event on May 30th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time at Book Passage at the Ferry Building, San Francisco, California. Phone number 415-835-1020. Dr. Monica Sharma will discuss her recent book, Radical Transformational Leadership. This book is for people who have questions. It encourages us to question the status quo, ask relevant questions, and generate insights that will foster universal prosperity and establish equity and dignity. Everyone has the potential to be a leader, a person who creates a new future through actions in society, at home, and at work. This book lays out pathways for unleashing our human potential to create new futures through strategic action. Again, join us for a book launch event May 30th at 6 p.m. Pacific at Book Passage at the Ferry Building, San Francisco, California. Phone number 415-835-1020. Are you a game changer? Do you care about creating a vibrant future for humanity planet? If you care, you'll choose to engage in strategic actions in order to transform the realities of today for generating a thriving planet. Find out how you can do this. Read the book, Radical Transformational Leadership, by Dr. Monica Sharma. This book is a systemic exploration of how to work with and transform the interlocking circumstances contributing to the complex problems we're facing. There's a chance of achieving a world that manifests peace, equity, and well-being for everyone. And this work offers the readers the creative ways and means of contributing to such a world-changing agenda.
It is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Kirsten Gallo to you. Kirsten Gallo committed her career to promoting stewardship of public lands and the interdependence between humans and the environment. She's an ecologist serving as the head of inventory and monitoring division of the National Park Service. She creates environments in which people and planet thrive. Kirsten, what are the most significant contributions you have made working as a radical transformational leader?
Hello, Monica. It is my pleasure to talk with you. I'll speak first about some of the changes that I personally made related to who I am as a leader. First, I consistently use inquiry and reflection now to learn and grow so that I can be a powerful example of the change that I wish to see and a powerful voice for dignity, equity, and caring for each other. I also endeavor to express my full potential and support others to do the same. As an example, I created an environment in which my employees in the National Park Service are free to express their full potential. They now see themselves as agents of change, and they are all leaders within their area of influence. As a result, they take more responsibility. They step up to lead as appropriate, and they take the initiative and are far more creative in finding solutions. I'll give you an example. Allison, who is a videographer, she trains others in the National Park Service on making videos, so things you might see in a visitor center at a park. And she has incorporated transformational techniques based on the conscious full spectrum response framework into her training programs. And so now, in addition to learning skills such as how to operate the camera, what camera angles to use when they're shooting videos, our staff now understand how their videos contribute to achieving the National Park Service mission, and their passion for our mission shines through in their videos.
That's a great example, Kirsten. You know, Allison's ability to activate the space that exists in everyone, and even more important, the space you have created to support everyone to unfold in a totally different way. Thank you, Kirsten.
Mm-hmm. Second is our projects are aligned on the conscious full spectrum response framework so that we're able to create synergy between them. And we co-created a transformational response chain in order to identify the outputs, outcomes, and the impact that we want to create that are aligned with the National Park Service mission. And so now we have over 50 people working on projects that range from designing forest restoration strategies to how we do contracting to implementing wellness programs, safety programs, and they're all working towards these shared outcomes. So one of our goals, for example, is to increase the diversity of our visitors. National parks are a place of inspiration, beauty, and joy for everyone. And in the past, the food options for park visitors were largely unhealthy, and they consisted of hamburgers, hot dogs, and french fries. Isaiah, who is a contracting specialist, is working to ensure that we offer healthier food options. He understands that we can either include or exclude people, depending on the services we provide. And so thanks to Isaiah, we now offer vegetarian and kosher foods, as well as a wider variety of menus to nourish the diversity of visitors that we wish to have. So it's not just people who are on the ground who are making a difference. Administrative staff can also be game changers.
Absolutely, Kirsten. I think this example that you take and the way in which you've cultivated spaces and platforms for people to engage bring together what in large organizations is largely siloed. I mean, I worked with the UN, and there too we have this, you know, myth that, you know, people who are only in the field, they can make a difference to people. And you and I know that our operations staff can be so creative in honoring the space for everyone.
They have a huge influence in the culture, you know, inside the organization, as well as their ability to impact people outside the organization.
Absolutely. So what are the challenges that you address, and what results have you delivered?
One challenge is that our employee morale was actually very low. Many of our staff felt isolated, and there was a strong sense that they weren't being treated fairly, that they weren't valued by leadership. And so we established a team that creates connection and a sense of belonging between staff through safety, health, and wellness activities. So we are co-creating a culture of ongoing regard, which means that we treat everyone with dignity and respect. We value others' perspectives and their contributions, and we feel safe in being able to speak up and to take the initiative. Every single project that is taken on by this team is intended to support our culture of ongoing regard and the other outputs and outcomes that we've identified in our transformational results chain. This team also identifies opportunities for leadership to ensure that employees are treated fairly and they demonstrate the value of their work by linking it to our larger goals and mission in the service. This team is currently developing an employee orientation program through which new employees discover their purpose in working for the National Park Service and how their work contributes to the Park Service mission. And we're deliberately creating a culture in addition to learning the nuts and bolts of our organization through this program.
Absolutely, Kirsten. You know, the transformational results chain that you've been referring to, and when we work through it using our universal values, what we stand for, staff start seeing what their biggest contribution is to the whole. And I think that is so empowering and inspiring at once. Because very often in our everyday nitty-gritty stuff, we don't get to see that. And you have made a difference in the program as well as in the staff culture. Would you like to say something more about that, or would you like to go on to another topic?
I'll speak about another challenge that we've been addressing. And this is, again, we were able to shift using the transformational results chain the way that we do decision making. So in the past, we took a very siloed approach to planning and decision making, and we didn't have all the voices that we needed at the table. And often we made decisions for political reasons or because, you know, that's what we've always done. And some of our managers don't actually know how to use information for decision making, and they're frustrated because experts gave different opinions. But we now take a more collaborative approach to planning by creating multidisciplinary teams who use a very transparent approach to planning and to making recommendations to decision makers. So they're identifying conservation goals and the conditions that we wish to have in the future, healthy ecosystems. And we're shifting towards making decisions based on information and the desired future conditions we create. So we're shifting how we operate in the service which will have an outcome on our natural resources eventually.
And you know what I see when you describe this? Yes, I know that you have worked out the projects on conscious full spectrum response template, and I know you've used the transformational results chain. But what I also see is that you're using the synergistic operational strategies, because they all go hand in hand. They're all templates that look at the same phenomena differently. You've put in place information. You've put in place a way of cultivating one's own leadership qualities. You've put in place a supportive policy environment and a supportive workplace environment. And you have supported the people who've taken the risk to step out of the box. So thank you, Kirsten.
It's been fun.
Yes, that's right. We need to tell people that this is fun. You know, people think that transformation is a boring, heavy, highly, academic or highly spiritual space. It is a different space, and it's fun because you can see the energy unfold.
Well, I find it very enlivening and invigorating.
Yeah, yeah. How did your work shift patterns, Kirsten? What kind of breakthroughs would you like to inspire us with?
We have engaged in many, many projects, and we achieve a lot of outputs. However, before using the transformational results chain, we were challenged to achieve larger, more outcome-related goals. And now all of our projects are aligned, and we have the ability to achieve our desired outcomes and to shift systems and cultural norms. For example, in the inventory and monitoring program, we produce about 300 reports every year describing the health of different park resources, such as plant communities or birds. In the past, we did not work with park staff to ensure that our information were being used to conserve habitat or biodiversity, nor did we look at the results of our decisions so that we could learn from them and make sure they were accomplishing what we wanted them to. And we never considered how our daily actions and conversations contributed to the culture of our organization. Now, we promote partnership and a culture of ongoing regard through our everyday work. We actively engage with decision makers so that our information is used in conservation planning and decision making. And we also use our scientific information to engage our 326 million park visitors in our conservation mission through education and citizen science programs. So we now actually have park visitors that are out collecting data in parks that are used for monitoring and management. And I think that's fantastic because it completely demystifies science and engages our visitors in conserving our treasured national parks.
Right, Kirsten. A big issue in the world is how we make every phenomena so complex that people can't participate. Demystifying science and technology is so vital for us to be able to contribute to that. Would you like to say something more about that? Demystifying science?
We tend to hold science as something that only the learned people or, you know, the people with degrees are able to conduct. And while you certainly need a level of training in order to be able to design experiments, there's no reason why people can't be involved in the collection of data. You know, citizens can't be involved in the collection of data, and why they can't be involved in understanding how that information is used in decision making, what the implications of that information mean for our culture, for our systems, for, you know, whatever the data is related to or the decision is based on. That is that whole approach has been very disempowering for people because it creates marginalization. It creates differences between people and excludes people.
Right. The approach that we used to have as different from the approach you have today, correct?
Yes.
The previous one. And I think it does one thing more, Kirsten. It develops the capacity of citizens to advocate for the changes we wish to see. Because for them, collecting that data and seeing how information is used for decisions makes them be part of the decision-making process, and they can advocate for that outside too. That's fantastic.
Yes. It's especially powerful at local levels. For example, I live in Fort Collins, Colorado, and we have a large number of parks, green spaces for hiking and for, you know, riding your bikes and just being outside and playing frisbee or whatever it is you like to do. And what's fantastic is that the city created a citizen science program to figure out where the pollinators are. So they had people go out and find birds and butterflies. And they used that information to determine where the green spaces should be so that they could preserve the environment through the green spaces and have a healthy environment in the green spaces. And citizens were involved in every part of that activity.
Lovely, lovely. What else would you like to share?
Another thing that we have done related to using information and how we deliver it is Allison, the videographer that I spoke of earlier, and Margaret, who's a science communication specialist, work with science communication staff and park rangers all across the Park Service to design outcome-based criteria for our communication products. So we have criteria such as we want to be able to engage youth in outdoor activities. And we want to demonstrate interdependence between people and the environment. Again, these are National Park Service goals. And so they designed a peer-to-peer learning and review program so that they could learn and support each other in creating outstanding and impactful communication products designed to engage park visitors in conservation. And we consistently look for this type of alignment with goals and outcomes in all of our activities. And in this case, we have created a culture of community, a culture of partnership within the Park Service that delivers information specifically to our visitors in an impactful way.
Fantastic. Getting back to you, what do you do differently in your current engagements because of working as a transformational leader, a radical transformational leader and steward?
I would say that I have substantially increased the level of rigor in my work. I created criteria that need to be met before I will engage in any project. And these criteria are, they support oneness, meaning it increases unity, reverence, interdependence, and it decreases marginalization and commodification. The second criteria is that it manifests the full potential and the courage to create in people, meaning it gives people power or voice in creating solutions and being part of decision making. And the third one is that the project supports, creates, contributes to thriving environments and thriving communities. And I don't work on anything that doesn't meet these criteria. And I work to manifest these outcomes through every project I'm involved in.
That's truly inspiring. Yes. What else?
I'm also highly strategic about how I design projects, again, based on the conscious full spectrum response framework. Everything I do is aligned with the outcomes and systems and cultural shifts that I've identified personally and professionally. And these outcomes are intended to solve the root factors of the problems we face, many of which, as you know, are interrelated. So I'm currently leading my program through a strategic planning process, for example. The Inventory and Monitoring Division has more than 400 staff in 32 locations across the country. And I'm approaching this process as an opportunity to create a shared purpose for our program. We currently have a good shared vision of what we do, but we have less alignment on why we do it, that larger purpose, and I want to create that connection. I also really want to increase the cooperation and cohesion across the program and ensure that every person feels heard and like they're part of the solution. And those goals are directly aligned with the criteria that I just described. We're also looking at how we can increase the value of the products, the information that we provide, how we can address capacity gaps in our program, and how we can ensure that our program is on a strong foundation in terms of funding and the quality of our work long term. So there's practical aspects of, you know, how we operate in addition to those larger purpose and connection pieces. Also, Monica, I cannot overstate the importance of reflection and inquiry. I mentioned it earlier, and I find that it's absolutely vital for maintaining integrity, for learning, and for ensuring that you achieve your goals and account for unintended consequences. It's a constant touch point when you're working with teams to ensure that you're all working towards a common vision.
Right. This is great, Kirsten. We are about to conclude this part, so I'd love you to share the key points that you want people who are listening to retain and take away. What would those be?
So my take-home messages would be, number one, transformation occurs through shifting how we do our routine work. It's not about new projects or initiatives, although certainly, you know, you may want to start something new. It's literally about how you run your meetings, how you communicate, how you approach problem solving that genuinely makes a difference. We do the work we do for an important reason, but we can do our work differently in order to create different outcomes. The second one is that everyone, every single person, has the ability to lead and to be a game changer. Leadership is not just for people with titles like president or CEO or general. And if you want to shift a culture, you have to have everyone involved, and it has to be co-created. Doing so creates the opportunity for people to use their strengths and be creative and to reach their full potential. And it's such an enlivening and invigorating experience. The third take-home message is that it's actually easy to design in a way that shifts systems and creates universal values like dignity and equity. It doesn't require additional effort. It doesn't require special training or abilities. It's literally something that everyone can do. It simply requires the intention to create based on universal values and a willingness to master a suite of tools, such as the Conscious Full Spectrum Response Framework and the Transformational Results Chain.
Thank you so much, Kirsten. It's been inspiring to have you on this radio show.
Thank you, Monica. It's been my pleasure.
Are you a game changer? Do you care about creating a vibrant future for humanity planet? If you care, you'll choose to engage in strategic actions in order to transform the realities of today for generating a thriving planet. Find out how you can do this. Read the book, Radical Transformational Leadership, by Dr. Monica Sharma. This book is a systemic exploration of how to work with and transform the interlocking circumstances contributing to the complex problems we're facing. There's a chance of achieving a world that manifests peace, equity, and well-being for everyone. And this work offers the readers the creative ways and means of contributing to such a world-changing agenda. We live in a world battling for peace, threatened with violence and inequality, being justified as both means and ends, sometimes disguised, packaged, and branded differently. This self-destructive worldview is dominated and backed by spurious arguments for leadership based on the idea of supremacy of race, religion, culture, or of money. Monica's counter, a perspective drawn from contemporary idiom, is based on experience and conviction. It shows that leadership can be shaped with equality, freedom, justice, and where means and ends are rooted in the transformatory power of human compassion. Let's explore this transformatory power of human compassion together. Join us for the program with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday at 6 a.m. Eastern. Share this information widely. Enroll people who want to make a difference. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network hosts many programs that unite humanity sourcing our love. Are you satisfied with the world as it is today? If you're not satisfied, join us for a book launch event on May 30th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time at Book Passage at the Ferry Building, San Francisco, California. Phone number 415-835-1020. Dr. Monica Sharma will discuss her recent book, Radical Transformational Leadership. This book is for people who have questions. It encourages us to question the status quo, ask relevant questions, and generate insights that will foster universal prosperity and establish equity and dignity. Everyone has the potential to be a leader, a person who creates a new future through actions in society, at home, and at work. This book lays out pathways for unleashing our human potential to create new futures through strategic action. Again, join us for a book launch event May 30th at 6 p.m. Pacific at Book Passage at the Ferry Building, San Francisco, California. Phone number 415-835-1020.
You just heard Kirsten Gallo share examples of how she has applied this work in her own department in the National Park Services and how it's impacting everyone. There are a couple of things I wanted to highlight. You know, she highlighted why we do something. And she highlighted saying that the why needs to be the larger purpose. When we can connect the larger purpose of why we want to work, why we want to join, why we want to serve any agency, we are able to make breakthroughs, generate breakthroughs. That why is not about reason. That why is about purpose. So connecting the purpose I have for my life to the work that I do and being able to use templates that allow me to do this is so important. There are a couple of conversations I want to leave you with. And one of the conversations is really about the way in which the whole domain of motivation and inspiration is described. Usually people will say in any organization, the systems, norms, and structures need to be designed primarily to increase performance. And employees need to be motivated to complete tasks towards that end. They don't need to think about bigger picture. They don't need to think about deeper questions. That will lead to chaos. And it's not practical or profitable to do so. But you've heard something totally different from Kirsten. It's very impactful for us to be able to engage our staff differently. So the new learning is when formal leadership chooses to establish a work culture that sources people's inner capacity for creativity and work processes, and then connects them to the bigger picture, the organization has a thriving work culture. It has the engagement of staff towards that larger purpose. And the systems, norms, and structures are based on authentic information, universal values, and this is both profitable for the organization and wholesome for staff. So this is not an either-or issue. In fact, this is what we can do using these templates to make a difference. Then there is another myth that you heard Kirsten Gallo really, you know, bust. or another way to say it is it's a fallacy, it's a narrative that we have, and we have new learning. So one narrative is that in today's world, the most important elements for the project to produce intended results are the knowledge base, and therefore we need a robust design and good management to get the knowledge, the up-to-date knowledge and technology, and relate that to the inputs, outputs, and what we need to manage. Wrong. For enduring results, the design and implementation of our projects or ideas needs to harness the knowledge and skills, of course, but it must address the systems and cultural causes as well, and the root factors of that problem. The key is to source our inner capacities and universal values to both design and implement. This work is about being who I authentically am through action, embodying the universal values, not just talking about them, for personal and planetary transformation at home, in our workplace, in society, and for the planet. I invite you to join all of us in these journeys where we will create a thriving future for people and planet. Thank you.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.